What's up, family? You are tuned into Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. From KPFA Radio and the Pacifica Network, I'm your host, Kat Brooks.
Imam Jamil Abdullah El Amin, formerly known as H-Rap Brown, has died at 82 in a federal correctional medical facility. Joining us to discuss his life and legacy in Black political prisoners is Daruba Bin Wahad, an American political activist and author, former leader of the New York Black Panther Party and co-founder of the Black Liberation Army. He was one of the Panther 21 defendants charged in 1969 with conspiracy to attack New York City police stations. Good morning, Brother Daruba. Thank you so much for joining us.
It's late afternoon here, and I'm on the west coast of Africa, so it's late afternoon here. But good morning to you.
Good morning to you. Well, good afternoon to you. Yeah, it is good morning here. I'm in Oakland, California. And just real quick, Brother Daruba, I see that we are now also joined by my comrade and my brother, Kalonji Jamachanga, and the organizer, founder of the FTP movement, co-chair of the Urban Survival and Preparedness Institute, and co-founder of Black Power Media. He's also author of the best-selling book, How to Build a People's Army, and co-producer of the documentary, Organizing is the New Cool. What's happening, Kalonji?
I'm alive on arrival with my sister, Kat Brooks. What's happening?
It's always a better morning when I get to talk to you first thing. It makes all of the stupid sort of go away. I wanna actually play a clip real quick for the listeners that my producer pulled. It's KTVU, which is a local station, news footage from 1967. Kirsten, let's roll that tape, please.
If it's beneficial to be nonviolent in certain situations, then it has been policy to be nonviolent. But in terms of self-defense, we've always had a strong position that individuals are given the God-given right to defend themselves. And what's more, they're protected within the framework of the law to protect themselves. When white people participate in the movement, you know, they should participate on a level that they civilize the other element of that white community. Now, you know, like, because, you know, it's not a thing of where they're helping black people, they're helping themselves. Because freedom cannot be given. It's not a, you know, welfare commodity. Freedom is something that has to be gotten and taken by the people who are oppressed. I don't think there is any organizational differences and, you know, philosophical concepts. I think we're going to proceed along the lines of organization that we began. And that's, we're going to have programmatic projection in our work areas.
Do you have any philosophical differences with Mr. Carmichael?
Not that I know of, and if I did, I wouldn't tell you.
That last clip might be my favorite what we heard this morning. I want to start just with your reactions to his death and his death while still held hostage by the U.S. government. I was looking at Instagram. I think it's a quote attributed to you, Brother Daruba, that our failure to get the brother released was a collective disgrace to us all.
Well, I don't know if I actually said that, but I feel that anyway. I think that, I really want Kalonji to lead off with this because I think that what I want to follow up with is where do we, how do we process this in a way that that not only raises the bar. In our so-called elected and public leaders raised the bar regarding their support and their intense work in lobbying to get our political prisoners released. If they could lobby for ceasefire in the Ukraine, they could definitely lobby for our political prisoners. But I want Kalonji to respond. Kalonji, could you we discussed this earlier.
Go down.
Thanks
for that alley-oop. For us, you know, this wasn't the death of Imam Jamil Al-Amin, formerly H-Rap Brown. This was an assassination. Okay, this was a state-sanctioned legal lynching. This is what's been going on for decades. Imam Jamil Al-Amin, formerly H-Rap Brown, was clear that, as he would say, this is what comes with war. And so our reaction, if I dare speak for the people where I'm from, our reaction is a cross between being livid and angry, and also sorrow, of course, because of the fact that we lost one of our leaders. Imam Jamil Alameen, formerly H-Rap Brown, again, was my leader. He's the reason I came to Atlanta, and I would dare say that he's the reason, one of the reasons that I know the two of you. You know, coming to Atlanta in 2004 in particular was when the quote-unquote FTP movement kicked off. But it was to come in support of Imam Jamil because of the fact that he was framed and kidnapped by the state a few years earlier. But, you know, to answer that question directly and without holding any punches, it was assassination. And it's not just a quote-unquote, Imam Jamil made his transition and, you know, it was his time and all that nonsense. It was war.
Thank you for that, Brother Kalonji, and thank you for, I mean, I know that that's what it's going to be when you're on the show. There is no pulling of punches. I'm going to go ahead and go to you, Deruba, and then I want us to spend some time on unpacking a couple of things. A, that statement, this is what comes with war. I want to tie that to what you want to talk about, Brother Deruba, and that is, how do we hold our elected officials to account to advocate for the freeing of our Black political prisoners? Hold on, brother, because I'm trying to frame the question so that I get a full answer. At a time, so what I've noticed, I'll just go to what I see to be true is that even folks that, you know, sometimes start on the side of the line that the three of us are standing on, that once they go into those offices, there's a shift in priority and practice and a muting of freedom fighter language.
Well, that's because there's no mechanism to hold them accountable. And the duopoly political system, the Republican and the Democratic Party, of which the Black so-called elected officials dominate, have been consistent in their support and in their mentorship support and collaboration with the white supremacist a settler state. That's the Republic of the United States of America, and our presence in this entity is the consequence of an act of war that was waged against African people, and that war has resulted in our dispossession and relocation into this territory, and all of our history here has reflected that status. We are at war with a white supremacist Euro-Christian construct that right now is hemorrhaging its political and moral credibility in order to maintain the United States as a white-only settler state. That's what my immigration problem is all about. That's what ICE is all about. And that's what it's going to be about when it comes to us. That's what mass incarceration was about at the end of the civil rights era and the Black Power movement, when so-called symbolic victories of voter rights and equal opportunity were provided to African people in the states, we thought we had concretely changed the institution of white supremacy, and we didn't. It was symbolic. It could be erased at any given moment, and we see that now with the Orange Man and what he's doing, and we see them doing that in terms of the world order. This is the look at the capitulation of the United Nations to the genocide of the Palestinian people and the African community, the elected officials in Congress and in the Black Congressional Caucus are silent on the genocide in Western Asia. They're silent on the genocide that's being waged against people of color migrating to Europe who are being hijacked and imprisoned on the high seas in North Africa. So we need to understand that we are in a geopolitical moment in which the white supremacist construct is under assault at home, because in 25 years, America will be a predominantly nation of people of color. And that means that these institutions of white supremacy, these institutions that profit off war and our marginalization, will no longer be able to determine the destiny or the political writ of the United States. And they're not going to allow that. They're not going to let that happen under any circumstances. So they're beginning with people from Latin America, from the very countries that they plundered for the last two centuries. They plundered Latin America. They plundered Bolivia. They plundered South America. And the people have no home. They have no livelihood. They have no future. And so they come to the center. They come to the metropole of the United States, and they're treated like criminals, and they're treated like animals and pirates and brigands. And so they're being rounded up in broad daylight in our streets, in our community. The military is being deployed in our community. They're training in our community, established cop cities all over the United States. What does it take for us to understand that we have been at war since we were brought here, and that this war has two phases? Sometimes it's political and not violent, and most of the times it's violent and political. So we need to really understand that what this means for us, that these bootlickers that are sitting in the Congressional Black Caucus, these fake so-called leftists like AOC, these fake so-called radicals in the Democratic Party, and what they need to understand is that we can displace them, we can remove them. And so all politics is local. There's a reason why the Democratic Party doesn't want anyone to challenge Hakeem Jeffries in his district after the victory of Mamdani. The reason is, as they want AIPAC Shakur, as he's been labeled, they want him to stay in position in the Democratic Party. So we need to really understand that all politics is local now. In this off election year, we need to clean house. We need to build a coalition and a united front to stop this fascism that's rising in our streets, to organize with popular organizations, to get behind protesting in these elected officials' offices and in their face. We need to hold them accountable. We need to summon them to town halls and make them explain why they're allowing the United States to finance the United Arab Emirates in their genocidal support of the RDF in the Sudan, the foremost human rights crisis in the world today, far above Palestine. And Palestine is no small genocide now. Is over 2.5 million people starving to death in the Sudan, women being raped on a daily basis. And all of this is done with the support and the nod of the United States, funding its allies, its Arab allies, in the UAE, in Qatar, and in Egypt. So we need to understand that what's going on in Western Asia, the so-called collaboration of Muslim and Arab nations against the very survival of the Palestinian people, also resonates in the Sudan, because it's the Sudan that has ports that could reach to the Red, that open to the Red Sea. And this is these are vital routes for the UAE, for the Arab nations above the Sahel. So we need to understand what's happening. And that's why this conference that was recently held in Ghana, and I'm going to end there, in which I had the opportunity to be at and speak at, that's why the president of Ghana said that he adopted the Accra Declaration. And the Accra Declaration is calling for the total and absolute reparations and repayments for the European slave trade and for the colonization of Africa. and that this reparation campaign has begun with a, they set up a committee, an international committee, to begin to forge this policy in the African Union. They have, the president of Ghana also announced that they have agreed with seven other African nations to remove visa restrictions on Africans travel between countries. The walls are coming down of the colonizers. The young people in Africa are rising up against these collaborators with neo-colonialism. And so we see this, and at home right here, the diaspora has to take up this struggle. We have to assert our control over our communities. We need control of public safety. We need to support those politicians on the local level who are about taking control of the local public safety institutions, the police, the fire departments, and all of these institutions, and make them responsible and accountable to the people in the community. We could do this through referendums. We could do this through electoral process. But most of all, we have to understand, too, that these people have a history of violence. They have a history of cloaking their racism and their hatred of Muslims and their hatred of non-Europeans. They have a way of cloaking it in platitudes of democracy and free speech and all of this bullshit. So we need to understand and be clear what we mean by that democracy. We don't mean democratic fascism. We don't mean democratic imperialism. We don't mean a popular vote of white supremacist MAGA lunatics determining U.S. policy in Africa. We don't mean that. So we have to get on our case. And I think that what Kalonji was pointing out about how Imam Jamil was treated, was murdered. You know, he was murdered by the state. This was an act of war. You know, this is what happens to our political prisoners. This is what happened to Mutulu Shakur. This is what happened to all of our political prisoners, to Abdul Majid. This is what happened to Noah Abdul. This is what happened to many of my comrades. They died in prison. You know, and those who have been outside talking on the outside are trying to bring up the awareness of political prisoners have never had the timidity, have never had the support from the community on the level that they needed to step to a part of their campaign, that they have to run on a ticket of political incarceration and mass incarceration, you see. So I just wanted to say that things are moving. And the only way we're going to really raise the issue of political repression, its history, is that we have to take advantage of what this young generation is seeing now with this genocide in Palestine. With these young people out on the streets now wanting to institute some serious change. We have to educate them about our radical history and the validity of our radical tradition. And this applies to the Muslims who are from abroad, immigrant Muslims, who think that the black struggle for self-determination and freedom and power and dignity doesn't affect them. It didn't affect them. They wouldn't be enjoying much of the privileges and rights that they think they have now were it not for the struggle of African people in the United States and people of Latino ancestry. So let's not get it twisted. We need to build on the basic fundamental grassroots level united fronts and coalitions that express our political needs and our desires. And this is one of the reasons that the state is terrorized by the Mondani election in New York, because he ran on a ticket. He ran on a platform of addressing the needs of New Yorkers, free transportation, and access to food, stuff that the Black Panther Party did, you know, back in the day. You understand, he's talking about access to affordable housing. He's talking about making landlords pay more. All of these things, these crackers lost their minds. times. They called the man all kinds of names. They called him a communist, a communist jihadist. That's like an atheist Muslim. You know, I mean, and none of our so-called black elected officials have really endorsed him. In fact, they have tried to distance themselves from him, you see. And so we need to challenge these people. We need to get rid of the Hakeem Jeffries and Cory Bookers, and we need to run them out, and we need to build public safety zones in our community that are run by the community, that hold the police accountable for policing us off a national election year. And so I'm all in for that. But I think that the passing of Imam Jamil Al-Amin, formerly Rap Brown, is a milestone in our struggle.
We're losing you, Brother DeRuba.
This man the same one that Bill Clinton eulogized. I forgot his name, the bald-headed guy that passed away, that used to be in SNCC. He said that that SNCC and were going too far to the left, but this person that he was at the funeral of brought him back. You know, he brought him back from the brink of Kwame Ture and H-Rap Brown. So we need to understand that this man was a giant. H-Rap Brown, Imam Jamil Al-Amin, he was a giant that emerged from our struggle in our heritage of resistance. And it's disgraceful that he is not being paid the type of homage and the type of praise that his life deserves.
Thank you, Brother DeRuba. Kalonji, we're out of time, but I wanna give you an opportunity to say a few words. My next guest is gonna have to hang tight for a couple of moments. The brother just laid out a conversation about holding our elected officials accountable. One might argue, I've argued, people way smarter than me have argued, that part of what made the Black Power movement so threatening to United States government is the development of mutual aid systems, survival systems outside of the established political structure, which I think is one of the lessons that we should be taking from our folks. That is why so many ended up languishing in American concentration camps, otherwise known as prisons. One of the things that I think impedes that work right now, and I'm going back to a quote by the brother, I'm trying to find it, that we are in danger of the entire movement being co-opted, or something like that. One thing that impedes that, that this development of mutual aid systems is really returning to the people to develop the survival systems for and with the people, is the monetization, celebritization, and privatization of our movement. These will be your final comments. Tie all that together in your black brilliance, please, sir.
No doubt. First and foremost, it should be noted that I met Cat Brooks on the streets. We were organizing and we were doing, I guess, what they call mutual aid right now with no money. Okay, so, you know, let's start with that in L.A., in Los Angeles. This is how we got together. But I would say just real quick, the professionalization and the corporatization of, quote-unquote, I hate the word mutual aid. Let me just say that. I don't even like that term. You know what I'm saying? Of survival programs, as the Black Panther Party would call it, is criminal in and of itself. I think that to all of what DeRuba said, and in the spirit of Imam Jamil Al-Amin, formerly H-Rap Brown, it was absolutely necessary to kidnap him, to frame him, and to just get him off the streets because of the fact that it helped to usher in this new regime of corporate organizing. You understand what I'm saying? There are not too many freedom fighters left. You know what I'm saying? As of now, we have more ancestors than we do elders. And the co-optation in and of itself is criminal. And there are plenty of groups out here that if we had time, I would probably name their names. And I pray, and I'm going to end it with this, I pray that certain folks don't even utter the name Imam Jamil Al-Amin. It is a sad day in the world, on this planet, when you see white folks and the U.S. government flying their flag half-staff for Charlie Kirk, and Negroes are running around doing everything including partying and BS, and we've just lost the closest man to an El-Hajj Malik Shabazz, a Malcolm X, and that being Imam Jamil Al-Amin, formerly H-Rap Brown. The fact that all business hasn't stopped is criminal in and of itself.
There's so much more to unpack with the both of you. I'm going to have my producer reach out to both of you. I want to do an hour-long pre-record. I just think there's things that we need to discuss we ain't had time to do today, and I want to get both your minds around. So I hope you both will do me the honor of setting up a later conversation where we can go a little bit deeper. But for now, I'm going to thank you so much for joining us, and safe travels, Brother Daruba. Be easy out there, Kalonji.
Thank you, Mama. Be safe.
You've been listening to Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. That's it for this episode, family. You can find more information about topics and guests in this episode's show notes. Law and Disorder is produced at KPFA. That's listener-supported radio on the Pacifica Network. The show is produced by Jesse Strauss and hosted by me, Kat Brooks. Our theme music was composed by Steve Raskin of Fort Knox 5. If you like what you heard, please follow us on social media at Law and Dis, that's D-I-S, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Feel free to holler at us about something you heard or send us a show idea at lawanddisorder@kpfa.org. You can also find our content live at 8 a.m. weekdays on KPFA. That's 94.1 FM in the Bay Area. Our show and all of KPFA's programs are funded exclusively by you, the listener. And if you're in a position to support us, please donate today at kpfa.org. Take care of yourself and take care of each other. We all we got, fam.